Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Troy Nunes is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Cicillo, and with me today is Jared Smith.
Just me right now? Just you and I?
Just you and I. Dan will be
nice.
Here soon.
Nice. Well, we get to powwow for an hour or so about the chaotic events of the last few days, so I'm sure we have a lot to talk about.
Yeah, obviously we've posted 50-some-odd articles on the site about the sanctions. Everybody else has to weigh in with their own hot takes. Figured we spend half our time talking about that, the other half talking about maybe football, but mostly the NCAA tournament, because that is what the sporting world is definitely turning its eyes to. So, Jared, starting out with you, just kind of where are you at in terms of the sanctions, how you feel things are going forward?
Yeah, I don't know if I've completely wrapped my head or I have a better idea now than I did like a couple days ago, but there's still a lot to kind of wrap your head around still. I mean, trying to figure out where you are on the penalties overall. And, you know, the more I read, the more I feel that the penalties that were in situations, the scholarships and other, you know, kind of smaller things, I think were okay. I'm still trying to wrap my head around more about, you know, the vacated wins. I understand they're trying to punish Boeheim, but I just, it, to me, it just seems silly or something they were just trying to make a point on. Overall, though, I think when the appeals come down and things get removed, all in all, I think it's going to work out where I think Syracuse fans will be not okay with what happened. Like, I know, you know, Dan Lyons talks about like how harsh in the scheme of things overall when it compares to other schools, Syracuse has been dealt a historic blow. But a lot of that I think has to deal with the NCAA, knowing the appeals process is going to happen and probably being kind of a little pissed off about Syracuse in general when, let's just face it, the NCAA was at Syracuse investigating things that was going on and Syracuse is still breaking rules or still trying to break rules. And I think that's more than anything that's why we are where we're at right now, is because of the incompetence that was going on. The NCAA just being mad at that more than anything else. So I think that overall as a fan base, we should be really upset at the people in charge. You can be upset at Boeheim if he was in charge of the program. But overall, I think, you know, I'm going to be the person to say this the most. Daryl Gross, he should have been fired yesterday or – almost as soon as the sanctions came out, because his role in this whole ordeal is pretty, I wouldn't say intense, but it's impressive how incompetent he was at his job when it came to compliance and trying, you know, even in the Fab Mello situation, how important his role played in all this. And it's just shocking to me. And you know, it's going to be a stain on Boeheim's legacy, but, you know, Daryl Gross probably will never find another AD job moving forward. I mean, unless Syracuse doesn't grow any balls and fire him, which I'm surprised they haven't yet.
Yeah, I think Gross has kind of been brought to the crosshairs by just about every Syracuse fan at this point. Somebody has to take the fall for this, and while the NCAA elected Boeheim, I think we're going to see through – by the time the appeals process is wrapped up, that the Fall Guy really has to be gross here. I mean, just a complete and utter lack of attention to detail, lack of attention to the general order of things, the fact, as you brought up, that we were breaking rules as the NCAA was on campus investigating us breaking rules. Just a bit too much, you know, administrative incompetence on the part of SU. And unfortunately, the buck has to stop at Gross. And, you know, you're right. I don't see him heading elsewhere at this point. I know a lot of us thought, oh, well, at least the Olympic sports have been doing well. At least women's sports have improved under Gross. You know, Pat Hayden leaves USC. He would seem to be first in line. Now, you know, the shooting star that was Daryl Gross in the sports administrative world is now completely faded, I think, in a lot of people's books. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens after the appeals process, how quickly, you know, SU gets rid of Gross and how quickly they can find a replacement that doesn't really have any ties to this administration.
Yeah, I think my overall thing, I mean, I understand why people go after Boeheim, especially the national media, because, you know, Boeheim has a, you know, a shaky relationship with the media and has crossed probably too many paths and pissed off too many people in that aspect. But also, I mean, we can all admit that Boeheim is, you know, he's the head man of the basketball program and the university. I mean, when you think of Syracuse University, you think of Jane Boeheim being there for all those years and all the things that he's done in all the games that he's won and the success he's had. So, I mean, with that itself, Boeheim, with his success, has kind of, you know, catapulted himself in a position where if something goes wrong at the university, the first person everyone's going to point at or call out for as a scapegoat is going to be Boeheim. And, you know, just because of his laissez-faire attitude with a lot of his program, though we're seeing now a little bit more people come out of the woodwork. They used to work for Boeheim or works near Boeheim saying, you know, he actually was pretty hands-on on some of these things. It was, you know, other things that he was kind of just let things go. But, you know, that's where I think the NCAA went after Boeheim in such a way that they did because, you know, he's the name and he's the one that, you know, has said things about the NCAA and continues to seemingly bend the rules every once in a while. And this is not his, you know, first go around with the NCAA either. So that doesn't probably sit well with an organization. But overall, you know, Boeheim is the head man. He's the one who made the plan. But if you do your research and you look into what they found and how things were run under Gross, I understand he did a lot with the PR and was a good guy, politician, but when it came to leadership and trying to make sure everything was running smoothly, he was, like I said, incompetent. And people can come after me if they want to call him that, but that's exactly what he is, and he needs to go, and he needs to go, like I said, on Monday, because the fact, before we played even in the Fab Mellon situation, where he was trying, like, he was in the group of, like, a part of the round table, sort of leading the round table to try to figure out how they could change a grade of Fab Mellows from his freshman year. And even, like, they kind of worked together to try to make everything, it's just crazy. And then not even knowing his own drug policy, you would think that'd be the first thing when he's on the job he would know, like, or how to enforce it or how to use it. And he basically went, during the hearing, he just basically claimed, like, I have no idea. The wording's weird, so I didn't even bother with it. And that's just terrible. Like, when you go to a hearing to defend yourself, like, in a court of law, and you go to the judge, and you're just like, yeah, judge, I just didn't understand the law. Like, so I figured I'd just ignore it. It just doesn't make any sense. It's just awful excuse for a defense.
Yeah, I'd agree there. I mean, I think everyone expects a certain amount of incompetence the more bureaucracy you put into an organization, but the fact of the matter is that this is wild incompetence on the fact of Syracuse University's athletic department, and obviously, again, that buck passes to Gross at the end of the day. What I want to see going forward is obviously the changes that Seaverud is specifically spelled out, that the athletic department is specifically spelled out. But I'd really like to see a thorough and complete search on a new AD that is completely, you know, removed from this situation. And I think there'll be a time for that conversation amongst the fan base. I haven't really done any research into it now, but, I mean, for replacements, do you want to see somebody who, another person who comes in saying, I'm going to fix football, or do you want to see someone who has some Syracuse ties, maybe understands our athletic department's unique issues and potentially, you know, even has some very, very distinct ties to Syracuse?
Well, I mean, that's a tough question for me to answer, but if I'm looking at a PR standpoint, I think you try to bring in someone outside the university who's going to bring some credibility in the sense of, like, discipline and making sure that, you know, at least for a while, it's going to be a tight ship and everything's going to be running the way it should be run. No excuses. Like, you can't bend or break anything. And you have to have that communication with, you know, reporters or the NCAA or whoever, or that transparency with everyone so they understand that this is how we're fixing things, this is how things are going to be run. And it's fine with me if our AD is not sitting, you know, courtside during basketball games, huckling up with his buddies and shaking hands with everyone he can and getting in every photo opportunity. That's really not, I mean, I understand that's part of the AD's job, but his job is to be the leader and set an example of an organization and do his job in the sense of, like, making sure everyone is following the rules and doing a good job. And that's really what Syracuse should look for. I just don't think credibility-wise that Syracuse kind of went, quote-unquote, in-house or had someone connected to the university at one point, if that would work. I mean, if that would work out PR-wise nationally. So I think they would have to kind of reach outside. What do you think?
I'm assuming outside, and I'll kind of see the floor to Dan slightly, who just joined us.
How's it going, guys?
Hello, Dan.
Very well. Very well. We're talking out our feelings.
Oh, I mean, that's how we usually handle this anyway. yeah, so I just caught the last, like, 2.5 minutes of that. I agree. I think going outside at this point is really the smart move. I think we want to kind of distance ourselves from anyone who could have been tied up in any of the various failings of the athletic department over the last 10 years or so. I think it's actually, it just popped in my head as soon as I got on the call. Siverud has ties to Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt is, you know, one of the other few private power conference football schools out there, and they've had some degree of success. Obviously, the James Franklin poaching by Penn State left them in a really bad position for a lot of reasons, more so than most coaches leaving do because of how he basically ransacked their recruiting class and whatnot. But I think they're not necessarily a model, but that's a program and an athletic department that has to deal with more strenuous academic issues than Syracuse. Syracuse usually gets the kids they need. They want to win, and they don't run too much differently than a public school in that regard. But also they understand the constraints of running an athletic department in a major conference without having the advantages of a public school. So maybe he knows people from his background at Vandy that can, you know, that might be a good candidate. But it's still hard with athletic directors because they come from, it's not like a coach where you know your next head coach is going to be a previous coach somewhere at some rank. Like, athletic directors kind of come from a lot of different backgrounds. So there's no, like, obvious hire.
Yeah, and I guess that's what I was hitting on kind of before you came on, Dan, is that unfortunately there is no obvious choice here, but the big issue is, you know, do you find someone who, while doesn't have ties to the current administration, maybe, you know, knows the program, or do you pick someone who is completely, like Gross, an outsider and kind of comes in with a, you know, an I'm going to fix football and I'm going to turn Syracuse into a team that can win 8 or 9 games every year type mantra? And I'm not sure that those are the only two options, if that is as simple as that, which I guess is what is going to make this process, once it comes about, and it is. I think all of us are kind of sold on that, even if it has nothing been publicly announced, or, I mean, who knows how lengthy it's been discussed. But we're going to see someone who can bring Syracuse, and especially Syracuse football, into kind of a new era of hopefully success.
Yeah, I think it's almost like, I just said it wasn't like hiring a football coach, but in one way that it is, like, football programs you'll often see kind of vacillate between, like, offensive and defensive hires. Like, you know, they have a head coach who was an offensive coordinator. They, you know, after it turns sour with them, they decide to turn to the defense because they assume that's kind of where the failing was. And with Gross, obviously the football program was a major issue, and that's when he was hired, and that didn't really get solved. But I do think that Gross does still deserve credit for allowing or for helping Syracuse get into the ACC, which is probably the biggest issue, not when he was hired, but that Syracuse faced during his tenure. So he does deserve credit for that. It's not like, you know, everything he did was terrible. But now that Syracuse has kind of landed safely in the ACC, the issue remains getting the football program on track. And now, you know, making sure the transition in the basketball program is smooth and the basketball program doesn't get buried by these sanctions, which I think could go either way. I think Syracuse could easily survive the sanctions, or I could see them being very prohibitive to future success. So I don't think a guy like Gross, I think we've gotten the job done in terms of selling the university into getting one of the, like, whatever it is, 50, 60 chair spots where we're at the table now. So now we need someone who can elevate the sport that we need to elevate. And I know you wrote a piece about how Syracuse needs to really focus on football going forward. And I think that's kind of been true the last, you know, dozen years. It's just, you know, it was the one thing that Gross couldn't quite hammer down. It didn't help that Marone left. And it seemed like he had done it there, and people will give him varying levels of credit for that hire. But that's definitely got to be, I think, issue one or 1A, along with keeping basketball afloat for the next guy, who I think we all know, we all can imagine is coming. I said it in the roundtable today. I think we'll probably have a new athletic director by next fall. But either way, it's going to be very soon, I think.
Yeah, and also one thing, just to top on what Dan said about Gross, at least his ability to help transition to the ACC, he was very a huge part of that. And that's one thing we have to give him credit about. Marketing-wise, he did a fantastic job when it came to the program, I guess you could say, in the sense that he did help kind of help that bridge into the ACC and did a very good job with that. And obviously, Syracuse is making more money now when it comes to TV deals and stuff like that than they were when he first came here. So you could probably argue, too, that, you know, he's taken all the money from Nike and running with it as well. So that helps in a sense there. So with that, I'll give him that. So that he did do that. But that all goes away when everything else gets taken away. So you can't bring in all the money and then let everything else slip it as well, because it's, in the end, it's not going to matter. It's like you can bring in all the recruits that you want, but as long if you're not winning games in the end or championships, it's not going to matter. So, I mean, that's basically how I sort of look at it with Gross.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess the issue is, too, that there's two sides to that, you know, marketing-centric coin. That goes for Gross or anyone else, is that on the one hand, the marketing obviously had its benefits and obviously got us somewhere advantageous as an athletic department. On the other hand, that marketing is also kind of mimicked the, you know, marketing PR mantra, perception is reality. And this coming from someone who works in PR, that you know, the athletic department at the end of the day was very much about the appearances, and over time it seemed, based on the findings of fact, that it was more obsessed with the perception versus that reality, whether it came to the brand around athletics or the players that were eligible or what the university was doing in terms of keeping up with academics or behavioral issues or whatever it may be. There was definitely a concerted effort to keep up appearances over actual action. So that is certainly a scary thing. But refocusing a little bit here, I know, Dan, you mentioned my piece from the other day just about kind of SU focusing on being a football school. And it's funny to me, and again, this is not even like not funny in a mocking anyone who commented the way, but the one thing I did notice right away in that piece is how quickly everyone was willing to shout the idea down. I mean, do you think that at this point the SU fan base has kind of gotten past the point where it can really fully accept a football-centric school, fully accept a football-centric athletic department? Are we deeply entrenched in basketball school territory? Because at this point, I mean, and based on the conversation that I saw happening there, it very much seems so. And that can go to Dan or Jared, whoever wants to answer first.
Dan, you can go first.
Oh, cool. It's weird because I think Syracuse, at least for the rest of the Boeheim tenure and probably for a good deal after that, is going to be a basketball school in terms of just the balance between the two. That being said, I agreed with the general premise of your post because I think basketball is an easier sport to build and maintain just because it's fewer players to deal with. There's a far easier to make it to the meaningful postseason. You know, 68 teams have a chance to win a national title and stay, you know, as relevant as possible. And even one year, you know, we're going to miss the tournament this year. It's not going to be the end of the world in terms of, you know, we're not going to lose a whole class of recruits. We actually have a top five class coming in. Football is far harder to build and maintain. And I think football schools, you've seen that they, if they want to focus on basketball, they don't need to sacrifice much to do so. Like a Florida can come out of nowhere, make it one good hire, and win two national titles and go to a bunch of Final Fours. It's going to be a longer road for Syracuse to do anything close to that in football, but I do think that's where the effort needs to be, because even Syracuse now pulls in, you know, football is going to make more money than basketball for almost every school, no matter how good they are in both sports. So, yeah, I think that's where the focus needs to be. I think that's just where college football is. And I think people got scared by the post because they might have thought it meant, like, abandoning basketball as the main sport. And I don't think that's necessarily true. I just think the effort of the athletic department needs to be to build football up, because that can turn the athletic department from something that's hovering, you know, just above the line of where they're not making money to a really powerful one. Like, look at Louisville. Their football program isn't great, but it's getting very good, and their basketball program is great, and they have one of the most successful athletic departments in the country. Syracuse doesn't have some of the advantages that Louisville does, but already has one elite sport that makes more money than virtually every other, all 340 other D1 teams, aside from like one or two. So now if you have football to where it's even, you know, pulling in 42,000 fans a game, not selling out the dome necessarily, but putting forth good attendance numbers, and winning seven or eight games a year and having an engaged fan base, you know, Syracuse Athletics is going to be way better off than just having basketball carrying the whole department every year.
I will say, as much as I'd like to agree, I agree with you fellas on how important football is to a school and a university if you're doing both, you know, basketball and football, because you know, obviously they bring in the most money, and football is way ahead of basketball if you do it right. I just don't see, I think there's a push to try to make football better. I just don't see it happening, in the sense that I think it's extremely hard for Syracuse to sell itself as a football program especially when the fans are number one, the majority of the fans, in a larger scale, if you're thinking of, because when it comes to Syracuse athletics, that's pretty much the professional sports, scene in central New York. Everyone, I live in Ithaca, New York, and it's a big Syracuse contingent here, but not everyone's really glued. The only ones that are glued into the football team are like Syracuse diehards, like my stepfather, and the rest will catch a Syracuse football game every once in a while the rest of the fan base around here, that's all they care about is basketball. Everyone in my area knows, that I write for Noons, and that's all they want to talk about is Syracuse basketball. And I think it's very tough for a program like Syracuse, where they're located, how they need to bring in recruits, the facilities that they have, you could argue the coaching staff that they have, to bring in the people they need or the players that they need when basketball is the biggest focus from a fan standpoint than football is. I don't know how much of a reality that is. That's just my opinion, but I just don't see it happening. I don't know. I don't want to say ever, but there needs to be a shift somewhere in the college football landscape for Syracuse to start competing at the level that you guys want them to be relevant in the national level. It could be coming. Like once everything kind of breaks up and things get different, we just don't know when that's going to be. But with the model that's set right now, I just don't see Syracuse, ever being better than, it's going to be very tough for them to compete with the Florida States and the Clemsons every year in that division, and even some of the other teams to even compete. So I just think you're looking at a team that's going to try to struggle to get to 500 every year. And I don't really, I don't even think it matters what coach you have either. So that's just my opinion. I think you're right in the sense that that's where the focus should be, but I just don't know how much it's actually going to matter.
Right. And you know what? And I think Dan kind of hit on this too. I think both he and I being, two of the, bigger football guys on the site, both commenters wise and staff wise, I think Sean being probably the third one in that group. It's not that I think we should compete with Florida State and Clemson every year, because I don't necessarily think that's always going to happen. I would like to think we have a chance to upset them every year at some point. What I would like to see is an investment to create an environment in which football is seen as in a potential equal to basketball and a potential relevant sport for those outside the pros would be a nice start, and for people we can go there.
But question two,
I think someone's under attack.
No, that was me and my soda stream. Sorry about that. A little parched. I had to create some seltzer. soda streams are fantastic, by the way. If you drink a lot of seltzer, go out and get yourself one. My point, though, is not only – I know I made a point about, fan bases. Yeah, I also think maybe the student fan base really can't support a good football team. They have a hard enough time trying to get in behind the basketball sometimes, too. I wonder how much that actually hurts Syracuse as a football program as well. Kind of the student fan base when it comes to football – because they've had some good teams, they've had some decent teams in the last 4 or 5 years, and they still have trouble getting, a good following when it comes to the SU students to get going, and I wonder how much that hurts, too.
I think that's definitely a
factor. The student fan base is terrible.
I think if you just look at the footprint of where Syracuse students come from, there's not a lot of Syracuse football fans coming from places outside of CNY, aside from alumni. So, I mean, I, you know, jumped on the bandwagon and felt and supported my alma mater when it came to college football, and I was a college football fan already. But aside, if there are people that I met at Syracuse who were already Syracuse fans, they were either from Central New York or alum or kids of alumni, which obviously isn't the majority of Syracuse students. So most of them are coming from the New York metropolitan area, Boston, Philly, some of the DMV, a little bit of like Michigan, and they either carry predispositions to root for teams like Notre Dame or Penn State, or they have no interest in college football, whereas college basketball, I think, is more culturally geared towards the Northeast. So even if they didn't have a team they rooted for, they might have watched the NCAA tournament or might have watched the Big East tournament. So I do think that is a major hurdle to get over. That being said, I mean, the Syracuse student section is full pretty much every first game of the year. The problem is Syracuse never wins those games, or the team is boring, or it just is. I mean, they're not good excuses. I'm fully on board with the whole you should root for your alma mater and support the team and buy the really cheap season tickets no matter what. But I'm also, you know, after 4 years at Syracuse and 3 years out, I'm very aware that that's not the reality of the situation, but that definitely is a part of it. The thing is that the student section is such a small part of the dome. You know, it doesn't look great the 15 minutes before the game starts when it's half empty. These people are still trying to get in the dome, and we're always going to see complaints about that. But it's a small percentage of who's actually going to the game. So getting the whole fan base on board is, I think, more essential than just getting the students. Like, they're never going to fill the whole stadium.
Yeah, I agree with that, Dan. And, you know, but overall, you bring up a good point there. I know I'm one of probably the only people that's ever gone to Syracuse from outside of Central New York that was a Syracuse football and basketball fan beforehand. I mean, granted, I was still in state on Long Island, but I mean, I know plenty of alums who only care in a half-assed manner, and it's not necessarily to criticize them. It's more just to point out the fact that, you know, these last 10 years or so have been kind of tough for a lot of Syracuse fans, and now you just kind of have it indoctrinated into fans that show up on campus that, you know, SU's a basketball school and football is kind of secondary. I mean, my wife went there the same time I did from 06 to 2010, and she pays zero mind to the football team, pretty much dragged kicking and screaming to watch any game, was not pleased when I took it upon myself to buy her a ticket to the Pinstripe Bowl the second time around. So this is not – this has become kind of an issue within the entire student body and many alums as a result. But I think you're right, Dan. This is not to just harp on those. I mean, yes, a good student section will oftentimes be infectious and contagious to the rest of the fan base that's on site. That said, it can't be boiled down to just them, and it shouldn't be all put on them to do all the work when the people in Central New York and the people who have followed the team for years have just as quickly abandoned this team. And those people have been watching them for sometimes 20, 30 years. So I think we have to kind of apply the same standard to those who have watched the team for 20, 30 years versus those who are just being brought into the fold, you know, in their first or second or third August on campus.
Yeah, I mean, you guys make very good points, and I agree in that sense. I guess the only thing saving us all now, right now, I guess, is the cross, right? I mean, that's going to be our saving grace for, like, hopefully, what, the next 3-4 years for a while. Though next year's basketball team should be pretty good. So, I mean, do we want to touch on that, maybe the future of next year and then what could be ahead a little bit?
I think we do, though. I think what we want to do first is talk about some beer.
You could do that.
So, Jared, you're not drinking at the moment.
I have been drinking, but not very fancy. So I don't go out a whole lot. So I was trying to think what I did have some Ithaca Green Trail the other day. So that was our couple
I heard
weeks
very
ago.
Good.
that's a good beer. So that's a good beer even for someone who isn't like really into like craft beers or scared. So it's pretty crafty when it comes to like it's got a hint of a bitter taste, but it's pretty smooth. It's very good. Ithaca Beer is doing a very good job of finding new and creative ways to kind of have people touch beer. So I really like them having them local.
Yeah, I haven't had so much Ithaca stuff recently, but they're always the stuff that I've had. You know, the apricot wheat is good. The brown nut's really good. They seem to have their act together. Unfortunately, you can't find it too far outside of the upstate New York area.
Yeah, the apricot wheat I really like. It's a really good summer beer.
For sure.
I hate apricots, so unfortunately, no matter how good it may be, I just don't think I can get behind it.
I'm not a huge apricot fan in general, but the beer is good. But, you know, I don't really like cherries, so I'm kind of the same way. I've had cherry wheat, and it's fine, but, you know, most of the time I have to pass and stuff like that. So, same thing.
Fair enough. So, Dan, what have you been drinking lately?
There is another beer I've had. Upstate Brewing does the Common Sense. I don't know if that's ever been mentioned on the podcast, but I've had that. That's a very good beer, too.
Not into that one. Where's Upstate Brewing located?
Good question. It might be Utica, but I might be thinking of a different one. Let me look.
I had a bunch of the stuff I sent you. John, I picked the bottles for myself. The one I didn't send you because you'd have a much easier time getting it than I do, although it's not very hard. I had Sierra Nevada's Keller Weiss, which I hadn't had. Mostly because when I think of Sierra Nevada, I'm looking for an IPA or something a little more hoppy. The Keller Weiss really isn't, but it's still really good. I was impressed with what they did with that style, which is obviously one of my favorites for those who listen fairly frequently. Surprised by how much I enjoyed that, since it seemed a little outside their comfort zone, but they're a really good brewery, so not totally surprised. And then the ones I sent you today, I didn't have my own bottle of the Sriracha 8, but the Fresh Chester Pale Ale and the Sunblock Wit from Captain Lawrence, two of my favorite. Captain Lawrence, one of my favorite breweries up the road in Westchester. I think I've brought them up before, so no use really going too far into them, but they're both really solid brews, and obviously you can get them everywhere around here, so it's always nice to be able to have those available.
Agreed, and I'm glad I got that box today because I'm very much looking forward to them. Though I have gotten several trade boxes in, so I kind of have to figure out a batting order here of what's getting drank when. As always, I drank a lot last week. Had Modern Times Proto Cosmos, definitely the best IPA Modern Times has put out. Really put forward those Galaxy hops in a great way that wasn't too bitter. If you're, you know, not a big fan of West Coast IPAs, probably not the one for you, but that said, probably not the worst one for you either. So definitely recommend it for those in Southern California area and in NorCal now, as well as Maui, where they've expanded their distribution. So I was down in San Diego this past weekend, so got to drink plenty of great stuff. Had Acoustic Ales, Halfway to the Danger Zone, a really great double IPA. Got to have Stone has their Spotlight series. It's one of the beers they kind of make. You can find it at other locations. This one was their light gray West Coast White Ale. Very citrusy, really enjoyable beer. Also got to enjoy the 2015 Old Guardian Barley Wine Extra Hoppy. On the odd years, Stone brews an extra hoppy version of their Old Guardian. Obviously, this being 2015, got to have one of those. Really, really enjoyed that. And then I'm currently just finishing off a Pseudo Sue, one of the most raved about pale ales in the country, from Toppling Goliath in Iowa. So got to get that via trade and thoroughly enjoyed that beer. Probably my second favorite pale ale I've had behind Zombie Dust from Three Floyds.
Upstate Brewing is in Elmira, New York. So it's actually right down the road from me.
There you go.
Yeah. I haven't seen them. I've heard of them before, but I don't think I've had anything from them. So.
Yeah, their common sense beer is very good. I was going to pick up the other day at the store, but it seemed like it had a born-on date or it had an expiration date, and it was late. Did not pick it up. So I have to figure out what my grocery store is doing with the date on the beer, because don't want no skunky beer.
I would agree, though I would also counter that a lot of grocery stores in general would be prone to having quote-unquote skunkier beer if they're going to expose it to too much light, which I feel like a lot of grocery stores do accidentally because they don't really know how beer gets adversely affected.
Well, surprisingly, Upstate Brewing does their bottling in a can, 16-ounce can. So... They do
No complaints here, because I would say that is definitely the way to go in terms of avoiding bad light exposure. I know a lot of places around here do cans. There's plenty of that only do bottles, though. Plenty that do both. I know Stone, notably, has been the one brewery that's really actively avoided cans at all costs around here. But a lot of the other Southern California brewers, especially when it comes to being at the beach. Or being in tailgating environments, everybody has kind of jumped on the can bandwagon, save Stone.
All right, so do we want to talk about future escapades for the basketball program in shambles, according to everybody else?
Sure. Talk about that for a couple minutes, but I do want to make sure we talk about NCAA tournaments since, well, I am sad about our team. At the end of the day, there are a lot of other teams playing that we should definitely focus on.
That's true. I can't wait till the brackets come out. That's always my favorite day of the year.
So I will be actively avoiding that this year.
Are we watching
the New York Knickerbockers.
I will not be doing that, yeah. Are we confident that the program can survive this? Because I feel all right. I think it'll be interesting to see how the scholarships work out. I guess we're just hoping that we have a lot of one and done players or players that decide to stick around for a little bit, and how well that's going to work out talent wise. But at least I think initially for the first maybe couple of years, Syracuse might be okay.
Yeah, I'm not worried about next year. I think in 2 or 3 years, especially with the point guard situation, I have faith that Caleb Joseph worked out, but it's going to be Caleb and Franklin Howard, who's not, a supernatural point guard. He's trying to become one. So with limited scholarships, you really can't, people have been saying, you can't miss on recruits. The flip side is this might influence Syracuse to – because there are fewer scholarships available, it might cause Syracuse to target more one-and-done potential guys, which right now Syracuse seems to do once every couple of years if they figure out if they're a legitimate shot to get someone like they did with McCullough. I'm not sure if Brian would have been a one-and-done type, but I think he would have been like a fringe one. And if not, it seems like they have passes on guys really pretty early or get out of the race, whereas if he thinks there's a good shot, he'll stay in it, with Nerlens Noel or Anthony Davis. So maybe Syracuse goes after more of those types to just kind of keep the roster turning over and not get stuck with someone who might not be able to produce while they're on the roster for 4 years, taking up a valuable spot. And also, it seems like the NCAA is shifting towards where scholarships are going to be guaranteed. So as much as some people seem to want to run off people, notably Ron Patterson, B.J. Johnson, that doesn't seem like it's going to be the reality of college sports in the next year or so. So It'll be interesting to see how Syracuse's recruiting changes, because it seems like we're not Kentucky, where they just go and try to get all the best players and deal with the ramifications later. But we're also not, we're not Villanova, where we're going to try to get guys that are ultimately four-year guys and have a team like this year where they have all these players that are, juniors and a couple seniors. So it'll be interesting to see how the coaching staff approaches that and maybe how when Hopkins does take over, whether that's, next year or 5 years from now, how he views that versus how the team has been recently. There's a lot of questions out there because of all the moving parts of Syracuse now, which, it's not great because of how it came about, but it certainly feels like there are more storylines with the program now than there have been in years.
Yeah, one thing when it came to recruiting, I found that was funny when it comes to the sanctions, was it reduced our number of scholarships and our recruiting hours, which I think work one hand in hand together. So, because we can't recruit as many players, so we have less hours and time to spend recruiting, which makes sense. But I don't know. I understand that it's used as a penalty, but I would think that you can survive a little bit better when you have less guys you can recruit, or at least you have to focus your targets more, I guess. And that's maybe if it's more of a one and done player, it can work out for us as well.
Yeah, and Syracuse has always been more focused in terms of not casting a hugely wide net. Like, SU generally gets people to commit really early and doesn't lose them, and they only seem to focus on a handful of guys at any given time. Like, right now, the only people you're hearing about for 2015, the only person really at all for 2015 is Tyus Battle, because we already have a commitment to Matthew Moyer. So Syracuse never was a program that was involved in, like, all these different races. So I think it'll probably affect SU a little less than it would have a team like Kentucky that gets involved with every big player, pretty much. Not that it's better or worse, just kind of a different approach. So it might be a little – the effects, I think they're still going to be pretty strong, because if you have a guy who just doesn't work out, it's a big deal. But it probably mitigates the effects when compared to, other teams that go after a really large swath of players and just try it and get involved in all these different races.
That's a very good point, Dan. And I'd actually tend to agree. Actually hadn't really thought about it until you brought that up. SU does kind of find its targets, go after them early. I mean, at the end of the day, especially recently, there's been a great shift in recruiting toward finding not just the guys that fit the zone best, but the guys out of the top recruits that fit the zone best. And that's why we've seen a lot of success and a lot of recruiting wins lately, and then a lot of one and dones as a result, because we just find these guys who completely know how to excel in that zone. I think that kind of practice run that we've had the last few years is actually going to come in handy quite a bit as we go into this this new era of sanctions. But on that note, don't want to run over too much here. A little NCAA tournament talk. I know if you guys haven't, we're pulling up the Lenardi bracketology, mostly so that we can berate him right away for putting, again, Wisconsin in the same bracket as Kentucky. That is not going to happen. And as always, as we have for weeks now, we'd just like to call that out right in the onset.
Before we dive in too much, I want to send our condolences to the Pittsburgh Panthers, who have also taken a one-year NCAA tournament ban as of about 15 minutes ago. They surrendered, I think, 58 points to Cat Barber tonight and lost to NC State. So welcome, Pitt. Welcome to our world. And actually, he has to finish with 34 points. And NC State dropped 81 on the Panthers, shooting 53%. So good job, Pitt. Welcome. Welcome to the world of, I'm sure you guys chose to do this just like we did.
Pitt, you suck.
Oh, I just can't wait till Georgetown loses in the first round again this year either, so.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a delight.
Wait, can we add that in? What double-digit seed do we think Georgetown loses to this year? Lenardi has him in Oklahoma State, and I'd be so quick to fill in Oklahoma State on that bracket.
Yeah, no doubt.
It's not as satisfying when it's a major conference team. I mean, last week it was Tulsa, and we thought that would be hilarious. This week, Oklahoma State, like, I think Oklahoma State is definitely talented enough to knock them off. A team I'd really love to see them face, I'd love to see Georgetown get themselves up to a 5, maybe lose to a Wofford. Like, that's really what I'm looking for.
Stephen F. Austin could also bludgeon Georgetown to death. Stephen F. Austin's no joke.
Yeah. Yeah, like one of them, maybe like a Valpo. Like, I'm looking for one of those when it comes to Georgetown losing to a double-digit seed.
Yeah, if I was Georgetown, I'd almost want to avoid this is just looking at Lenardi, so obviously it's a crapshoot, but I'd almost want to avoid the 5-12 game because he has, over in the West, he has Indiana BYU with a 12 game. That is brutal.
For whatever
he has West Virginia there, which is kind of sucks, because I think West Virginia is probably I don't know. All these fives are actually pretty decent, but that's a really tough draw for whoever gets that matchup with Travis
Pan. What happened to the injury with the Cougars yesterday? Because I saw what's his face went down close to the end of the Zag game.
That was really bad looking.
It was bad looking, and it sucked. It was literally 29 seconds left in a blowout.
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't seen anything about it, but I also didn't look. So let me research that a little bit while we go through this.
Sure. All right. So starting in the Midwest, because it's usually where we start, it's where top seed overall Kentucky is. Kentucky should have no problem with the first two opponents, whoever they may be. But that said, North Carolina and Northern Iowa really present some interesting matchups for them in a potential Sweet 16. I do see Northern Iowa getting to that Sweet 16 round, but Kentucky seems like a good bet to get the Elite Eight, despite the fact that there's really some tough games that could potentially end up there. I also don't agree, as we've said before, I don't think Georgia is going to be put on this 9 line just because if the committee's smart, they won't put Kentucky or any team really up against a team from their own conference like Georgia in the second round of the tournament. Down in the other side of the Midwest, I think Wisconsin's clearly the best team here. Oregon LSU is a bummer to see in the first round, if only because two interesting teams that could potentially upset others if they were matched up against different teams. But Oregon and LSU, one of them will knock each other out, the other one will lose to Wisconsin. And I don't really see Wisconsin having much trouble with any of Notre Dame, Butler, Temple, or Texas. So, again, Wisconsin will not be the number 2 seed in Kentucky's bracket. But if they are, for some god-awful reason, Kentucky, Wisconsin as the 1-2 for the Elite Eight in the Midwest sounds pretty good.
Yeah, it's weird that he hasn't moved Wisconsin out of Kentucky's region here in like 3 or 4 weeks. I just can't see, if you're going by the S-curve, I just don't see how Wisconsin's the worst two. It doesn't make any sense. I mean, we talk about this every week. There's no reason why Kansas or Gonzaga shouldn't be sent to the Midwest. But if he's going to do this to us again, I agree, Georgia being in the 9 is no way going to happen. At least when Syracuse and Marquette got paired together, there were too many teams. It could have been worked around, but like it made a lot more sense then for two conference opponents to be paired in the second round than it does for two here when there are no other 8 or 9 SEC teams. And there's only a handful to begin with. UNC, I just don't think they're nearly consistent enough. And they don't have the shooting to beat Kentucky. Northern Iowa is interesting. Even Valpo, they shoot the ball really well. They don't have the size, unless they went like absolutely crazy from 3, and it would be like a historic upset. So, you know, those things happen, but not as often as we probably think. I agree. I think Texas, if they play their absolute best basketball, could be an issue for Kentucky, but they haven't, and they have Rick Barnes. I think Kentucky, Wisconsin is just the easy bet here. It's unfortunate because there are some interesting teams, but just no one that really scares you if you're a Kentucky fan at all. Wisconsin's the only team that I think would be at all frightening. And there, you know, Wisconsin needs to be shooting the ball like crazy. I think that's the only way a team beats Kentucky this year. You're not going to beat them playing half-court basketball from inside the three-point line. It's just not going to happen. You have to bomb them out.
Well, there's certainly teams that can bomb, you know, bomb it out, too. I mean, especially in that bracket that they have there. Like you said, with the Wisconsin thing, Dan was making a case. Yeah, I would think that either – I would think Gonzaga probably would be a good matchup if Kentucky is the one there. If you're going by, I guess, ranking the number twos, I guess Gonzaga would be up there a little bit higher, maybe because making a case for a number one. But I mean, if we're going for, let's say, matchups, if the committee does look at that, probably Gonzaga probably sneaks into that Midwest range as a two, but who knows what they're saying. But I definitely don't think it's going to be Wisconsin matched up with them. But, yeah, looking at their bracket and who they got, the North Carolina could be a tough matchup for them, only in the sense that athletically North Carolina can match up with them. And if it's Northern Iowa can, you know, offensively probably can keep up with them, which, you know, if you watched all the SEC games, and I've actually watched a lot of Kentucky games this year, and then barely, it's just teams that have hung on with them just have not been able to make plays at the end. And you can credit that to Kentucky defense, but a lot of the times it's just they're just missing, and it's because they're not that good offensively, or they haven't built up a good enough lead early in the game. And then Kentucky comes back, just, you know, takes that 6-point lead at the end of the game, and just the other team can't catch up. Kentucky's good enough. If they click it on, they're gonna just run towards the Final Four. But if they do have an off game, they definitely can be beat. So I do kind of like them. And Wisconsin's the team, if you're going to the Midwest, that I'm really starting to like. I just think that they're pretty much the same team as last year. They got a lot of playing for it, and they got a lot of good players, and they play good quality basketball. So if I'm looking at the Elite Eight team or Final Four team, Wisconsin definitely there. Virginia, I mean, if you look at that bracket, that's a good bracket for them to kind of make some headway. Though Dayton, all Dayton does is freaking shoot threes all day. So if they get hot, they can knock off a lot of teams. But if they go cold, they're done. There, I'm trying to think. Look at Iowa as a 7th seed. It's good for them kind of turning things around. Maryland's still a good team, so we could see them. I kind of stuck with Maryland. Duke I like still. I mean, you guys touch on a lot of the smaller schools that you like here. I'm trying to look at, any team. I really would like the Georgetown curse to continue. That, you know, they get beat and the team that wins just continues to win. So that'd be fun, right? That's a question I have for you, Dan, is I don't watch, and maybe John has a little bit more inside of this, but this Gonzaga team, you know, every year I hear the same thing, and I usually don't watch any Gonzaga basketball, but it's like, oh, this is Mark Few's team this year, and they still kind of always say, we've heard this for years now, and people keep saying this, but is the Gonzaga team any good? Like, can they make a run, or is this going to be one of those two when they flame out?
I think they're good, but I think these Gonzaga teams consistently, they're the same thing every year. They have a couple of good players who can play with the rest of the country, but they're not athletically going to stack up with a Kentucky. They're not quite as skilled across the board as a Wisconsin. And then they obviously play really weak competition all year. So I think if they have the right seeding, they can make a run to, like, the Elite Eight on a good year. But I just never see them being, a legit Final Four contender unless a lot of things line up for them. So they're a good, consistent program. And they usually play, you know, at least for a long time they play for their seed pretty well. But now it feels like they get overseeded every year. Like when they were that one and they almost lost to 16 a year or two ago. And I don't know. It's a solid program, but they definitely benefit from playing the WCC, and where there's only one or two programs that are even like sniffing the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, I'd agree there. I know I was going to say it's tough to like tee up on Gonzaga every year, but at the same time, like I just don't buy them. I think, like Dan said, they're kind of overseeded on a regular basis. They're just not. They test themselves in the non-conference, but at the end of the day, a lot of the teams they test themselves against do not really turn out to be that great. The strength of schedule is just not up to par compared to a lot of these other teams. I mean, personally, I would think if you're seeding these along the S-curve, that Gonzaga would be in Kentucky's bracket. But based on Lenardi's bracket, Gonzaga actually ends up in a situation where I could see them losing to either a 7 seed in San Diego State. I could see them losing to North Dakota State, to be perfectly honest. But I think that the loss probably comes against Iowa State in the Sweet 16. Dan's beloved Cyclones continue to defy expectations, get themselves to what is very likely, in my eyes, to be an Elite Eight date with Duke. But there are some traps for Duke, and I think that's worth pointing out. Sorry that we skipped over to the South. We'll come back around. I could see Duke struggling with Davidson. I think they could struggle with Utah, but you're probably going to see Duke-Iowa State here. But at the same time, again, I think some good Duke teams have lost earlier before, and I could very easily see Utah-Iowa State matchup here in the South.
Duke also gets probably the toughest 16 seed, which doesn't mean anything. But actually, the 16s are generally, like, it's a pretty tough group. Like, Manhattan's a team with a tournament experience. North Florida beat up on not a good league, but the Atlantic 10 is usually pretty fun. So, I agree. Davidson's always good. I don't think they'll beat Duke, but they're always a good watch. I'm not huge on Wichita Hall this year. I am pretty high on Utah. Duke Utah would be a real clash of styles, and most teams can't guard the perimeter against Duke. But Utah, I think, is one of the teams that probably would keep them in the high 60s, low 70s. I'm almost rooting. I don't know. I've had a weird like clash of thoughts with Duke over the last like year or two, because while I can't stand seeing the same programs win over and over. Duke does, it is hard to root against Coach K when he's one of, like, the 10 defenders of Jim Boeheim in the world. So I almost want them to do okay. Not to be my beloved Cyclones, obviously. But I am kind of rooting for that matchup just because I think Duke-Iowa State would be such a fun game. I think both teams would score in the mid to high 80s. I think it would just be a classic Elite Eight game. This is an interesting one. I actually, going back to Gonzaga, looking through this, I actually think I would take every 3 seed over Gonzaga and Utah.
Yeah, Yeah, I would agree there. I'd say Utah, and I'd maybe go with Northern Iowa as well. I think that would actually be a fun game. Going up to the east a little bit, I don't think Virginia has an easy time with either St. John's or Dayton. I think where they really get tested is Arkansas, a team that, that clash of style that Dan alluded to early, that can really screw with a team that plays a slower style of basketball. I think Arkansas could really test them. But that said, I do see Virginia getting through. I see Maryland getting through without much issue down in the bottom half of this East bracket. And I do see Maryland getting to the Final Four here, which, sounds like blasphemy, but Dan and I discussed last week, despite all the hate for the Terps, and there's plenty of that, this is a very good Maryland team, and I think this bracket helps them out. VCU is another team to watch. I think Maryland, VCU, sounds like a very fun Sweet 16 game that I'd say is likely to happen.
Yeah, I mean, Iowa's okay. Kansas is fine, but they're all sorts of banged up right now. VCU has they've proven that they can win big in the NCAA tournament, and they're a pretty good team this year. They have had some injury issues as well, but they're not, like, waiting on banged up guys to get back. They're kind of the team they are now. Yeah, I mean, we go over Maryland every week. We have our favorite, and they haven't really done anything to waver. We'll see what happens in the Big Ten tournament, but I wouldn't be surprised if they won it. And it seems like this is kind of been, I think Baylor moved over, but I feel like we've had Virginia, Arkansas in the same area for a while now. Dayton is a sneaky team we saw last year. St. John's is super talented, not very good, though. I think Virginia preys on those kind of teams. I'd be way more worried about Dayton than I would be St. John's. And then I think, that Arkansas-Wofford game could be a lot of fun. I think Baylor would be interesting. A Baylor-Virginia game might not be too pleasant on the eyes, depending on how Virginia looks health-wise. If Justin Anderson comes back, that would probably, you know, that would change things a lot. Because Virginia, when Anderson is playing, I read today, is a top-five efficiency team on both offense and defense. They fall off a lot when Anderson is out. He said today that you need to hide his uniform and seatbelt him to the bench for him to not play in the ACC tournament. So I guess that means he's playing, or it'll look really funny on the bench. But, it's interesting. Virginia's health, I think people will – it's kind of flown under the radar because they're 7-1 without Anderson. But that's a huge storyline, I think, going forward because their story – I mean, aside from the game where they blew out Wake Forest by 40, they've just been getting by without him, and they're still really good, but they're not the one-seed team that just kind of ran through the beginning of the schedule without him. So if he's back and he's fully healthy and he's throwing his, like, normal 14, 15 points every night, I like Virginia a lot. And a possible Virginia-Maryland battle is very exciting. But otherwise, I think Dayton could be could be an interesting one for them. Arkansas, I think it would be an interesting to see what that team looks like, but I think Virginia is a good deal better. And then Baylor, I think, would be potentially probably the trickiest team from that top of the region.
Agreed. Now down to the West, which, like, I don't think any of the three of us have really touched on much yet. Jared, what are you seeing here? I know there's some interesting teams. There's some less than interesting teams. This seems like if you're going to pick a region that looks like Upset City, this might be the one you're looking for.
Montana. I'm into Montana, just like Seth Davis. Montana over Villanova right there, boy. It's calling it right now. I doubt that happens. Never picked the 16 over the 1, but now that'd be interesting to see how Villanova kind of reacts to that number one seed. I mean, it seems like when everyone talks about brackets and seedings, it's like, well, yeah, we got to give Villanova, you know, the number one seed. They have no reason why. And you have to. You just don't feel like they deserve it. Or they feel like a number one seed. So that will be interesting. I mean, I honestly can see them, you know, losing to Ohio State or NC State, any of those teams, you know, can play straight up with them. And that will be interesting. You know, West Virginia's been up and down this season. So we'll see how and then obviously with the Indiana BYU playing, if that is the case, any one of those teams can make a run, you know, to the Sweet 16 or Elite 8 as well. So, looking here, Oklahoma's been pretty steady. Michigan State has come, you know, from out of the grave. Night of the Living Dead. No one thought at one point in the season that they were going to be to make a run at the NCAA tournament, and they did. They've been fantastic. And Arizona, like I said, a lot of these West Coast teams, I don't know, but Arizona always seems to kind of come out of the, you know, not surprise everyone, but sort of like, especially on the East Coast, it's tough because you don't really watch a lot of their games, and all of a sudden, like, Arizona is in the Sweet 16 or Elite 8, and you're like, how'd that happen? And then you realize by, like, you know, the Elite 8 game or, like, the first Sweet 16 game that, holy cow, they have a lot of good players and they could actually make it to the Final Four. So it's always interesting to see how Arizona kind of, goes in that whole thing. But I would not pick Villanova. I definitely would pick an upset coming out of there. That's a messy bracket. I don't know really who I would pick. I would play rooting interest would be Michigan State, but I don't think I have the talent to do it. I'm not rooting for Louisville whatsoever. I don't know. That's a very tough bracket. Maybe Arizona. I don't know. I guess I would fill that in coming out of that bracket, but that is a messy one.
Yeah, the West is like a total minefield for Villanova. I really deserve a one seed, but it's kind of by default, and I can kind of see that changing if Wisconsin wins the Big Ten tournament and gets like has some good performances along the way. I think Duke is safer. It's the ACC tournament. Depends on how that plays out too, because Duke and Virginia are both vying for one. But I mean, that second possible game, Ohio State is the best backcourt player in the country. Villanova is a bunch of really good ones, but I could see D'Angelo Russell going off for 40. Anytime, not in Villanova specifically. NC State, I think, is coming on strong at the end of the year. They had a good performance today. They beat Syracuse pretty handily. I think they're more talented than your normal 9 seed, but they don't always bring it. But they could show up within Villanova. West Virginia is a scary team. BYU, Indiana are scary. Louisville, probably less scary based on recent events, but obviously they can give teams fits. Even Providence, Oklahoma, like this whole bracket, I think it'd be a very tall order for Villanova to get out of this one alive. I took West Virginia a couple weeks ago. I kind of like them. I think Villanova's more talented, but I think West Virginia is a little I kind of feel like the Big East has been a bit overrated from top to bottom. I think Villanova would have not gone whatever they are, 28-3 in a true power conference. And I just feel like someone's going to catch them. Like we saw, I'm probably a little biased because we saw the Syracuse-Villanova game, and they certainly didn't look like a one seed there. But there have been games where they come out flat. They end up winning out because they are a deep team, full of talented players, whereas most of the Big East is not. But that bottom, I don't see them making a Final Four run if the bracket looks like this. Arizona, on the other hand, I haven't been super high on them all year, but it seems like they're playing just really good basketball. They're starting to score well, where they struggled earlier in the year. Not a great shooting team, but they're probably the most athletic team outside of Kentucky. And they have a rock-solid point guard in T.J. McConnell. So I'm going to go West Virginia and Arizona. I don't know. I'm a little scared of taking the Mountaineers, but I could also see them losing to either Indiana or BYU. But it just seems like, I mean, Huggins is a good coach. They have a really good lead guard in Juwan Statton. I'm not buying Villanova.
I would agree. And I think part of it is we're all kind of, tainted a little bit by Syracuse's effort against them. But expanding upon a little bit more, I think NC State is a great kind of, like, if you want to look for a higher seed upset pick for a couple of rounds, NC State seems like a pretty good bet to get through to maybe the Elite Eight. I think you're well set up here for a West Virginia NC State Sweet 16. I definitely see Arizona Providence on the bottom half of this bracket. But I definitely see Arizona getting out. I know that Arizona's kind of struggled to get over that hump in recent years and get into the Final Four, despite some very talented squads. This seems like the year in the bracket, if this one would play out, just because it sees Villanova as the weakest of those four ones. And because, again, of the kind of bloodbath nature of this West bracket. So if I had to choose, I'd say NC State, Arizona, and Arizona finds its way to the Final Four in all likelihood.
I can totally see that. I think NC State's really good. I think it took them a while. They're obviously not consistent, at least over the course of the whole season, but they do seem to be coming up big when it counts. I wouldn't be shocked to see them make a deep run in the ACC tournament either.
Right, and also I'd say in that regard, if NC State makes a deep run into the conference tournament, you could see them suddenly play their way into a 6 or a 7 that it becomes a real headache for a 2, maybe Gonzaga down the line.
Yeah, I think they're way underseeded as a 9 in terms of just raw talent, and I agree. They'll probably want to be one of those teams. The class at UConn goes from, like, French tournament team to, you know, top 6, top 5 seed in one weekend type deal. I don't think they're, you know, they don't have a Shabazz Napier, but I could see them making a similar move.
Agreed. All right, so I think that kind of wraps us up for today, unless you guys have any other thoughts before we depart for another week.
Jared, how's Breaking Bad?
So far, so good. Season in, like, 4 or 5 episodes in, so enjoy. I started it today, got addicted, did nothing all day. So I have a feeling I will finish all 5 seasons pretty quickly, so, which is good, like, with Breaking Bad, there's only like 12 to 13 episodes per season, and there's only 5 seasons, so you can knock it out pretty quick, so I'm really excited for that. But yeah, it's really good.
I'm jealous of, you know, not being able to watch it with fresh eyes, so enjoy that.
Yeah, and I did a very good job of just ignoring a lot of it, you know, when it was going on, so I know some things that happen, like what goes, like, in the, you know, the so as we move forward, but I'm really, yeah, really, it's a new experience for me, so I'm excited.
Nice. Well, yeah, I guess that'll end us. This has been Troy Nunes. It's an absolute podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo. I'd like to thank Jared and Dan for joining me today.
Thanks for having us, as always.
Yeah, good to be back on.
Next
week is just we're gonna do is just break down our brackets, right? That's all we're gonna do.
Very likely.
And then I'll have cool stories because on St. Patrick's Day I have an NCAA bracket auction, so I'll have stories for that too. So that's a new experience. I haven't done an auction before, so I'm excited.
I'm going to Columbia, South Carolina for St. Patrick's Day, so I might actually be around. I'll probably be dead. So good knowing everyone here.
I will be in Phoenix, Arizona over the weekend, so I will be enjoying the Carmelo with Knickerbockers, some Dodgers spring training, and going to get myself a tour of... Yes. And the NFL.
It felt like Arizona here in New York today. It was 50 degrees. It was amazing. The sun was out, birds were chirping. It was crazy.
Luckily, I'll avoid any semblance of cold when I finally make my triumphant return to New York State come June, and it should be hopefully in the 70 to 75 degree range with a little humidity. So, so who knows?
Well, I'm sure we all hope it snows just for you, John.
Oh. So, safe travels, fellas.
Well, thank you. And for those listening at home, enjoy the rest of your week. Try to watch the ACC tournament. I know it's difficult. And be sure to review and rate us on iTunes and Blog Talk Radio because we do appreciate it. It does help, believe it or not. Sorry. Just kind of lost my train of thought. Thanks for tuning in, and go Orange.
Go Orange.
Go Orange.